Mu-Ming Phu est un grand professeur de neurosciences. Il est actuellement il a fondé et il dirige actuellement l'Institut des neurosciences de Shanghai sous l'égide de l'Académie des sciences chinoises. Mais il a été très très longtemps professeur à Berkeley, où il a fait une grande partie de sa carrière, en plus de Yale et d'autres universités extraordinairement importantes aux États-Unis. D'origine, c'est un biophysicien. You understand French, right? Don't you, Mu-Ming? Yeah. Yo, okay. So he's a biophysicist. I mean, initially a biophysicist, but he joined biology and he's been a professor at Berkeley University for a long period of time. Before he started this new institute in Shanghai, he's the head of this Institute of Neurosciences in Shanghai, which is a Chinese Academy of Sciences institute. And he's a big advocate of the non-human primate research because he believes, and we believe, that this research is absolutely mandatory. I mean, if you want to develop a better understanding of how our own brain works, sapiens brains. And Mu-Ming, thank you for having accepted to come. And we are very happy to hear you.
Thank you very much, Professor Pochon. It's my great pleasure, great honor to be here, to be invited to this open symposium. My talk today will be focused on the use of monkeys for research, both basic research and for biomedical research. I think the purpose of science to understand nature, one of the big things to understand ourselves, which is a primate species. And the most important thing about human as a human is our ability in cognition, which is unique in all the animal species. I would distinguish the cognition in three levels. The first is cognition of the outside world. We receive sensory stimulus, we have sensory perception, we integrate multiple senses to make a sense of the world. We transform the sensory stimulus into action, sensory motor transformation. We can attend focus our attention on specific aspect of outside world. We can characterize things in the world. We have quickly perceptual decision. All this actually could be studied in many animal systems, from flies to fish to mice. But there's another level of cognition, I would say the cognition of self and non-self. Many of the higher cognitive functions arise from new cognitive process. We make complex planning and make complex decision making. And we have self-awareness, empathy, theory of mind, knowing what other people are thinking, cooperative social behavior. These are the more complex cognitive processes, which are probably best studied in the non-human primate models. I think there's also a third level of cognition, which is unique, the cognition of language. The vocal communication is widespread in many animal species, but our communication has syntax and grammar. It's open-ended, a bit of open-ended construction of sentences. All this is unique to human. The question is, we cannot do experiments on human extensively, but can we study a species closest to human and to study the evolution of language? Perhaps use transgenic monkeys, putting human genes into monkeys, see what circuit changes in monkey. So these are the problems that are possible in the frontier of neuroscience, which I want to address today. Now, I think the goal of non-human primate research in the first is what I said, to study the neural basis of higher cognitive function unique to the primate species. But we also want to study the evolution origin of human intelligence, including language. This might be approachable in a non-human species. So we want to also generate monkeys with disease symptoms as animal models for studying and treating human disorder. As you know, that animal models such as mice, rodents, mice and rats have been used extensively in medical research. They are good, they have been used to model human diseases and testing in drugs and testing in treatments. And for brain disease, brain disorders, however, a mouse model has been a flat failure. People thought now think that the reason is that the human brain, human anatomy and physiology of the brain are so different from mouse that the drug effective might be effective in mouse, does not work in humans. And in fact, Alzheimer's drugs, all the Alzheimer's drug testing, billions and tens of billions of dollars spent over the last 20 years, all failed so far. Because the model for Alzheimer's was mice, which is a poor choice, but no choice. There's no choice in the past. So if we have monkey who have Alzheimer's symptom, it's a better preclinical test for the drug efficacy. The failure of drug development will be greatly reduced. So that's the reason. The other, while doing this, we need to, our goal is to establish a rigorous ethical practice in monkey research. There are general world consensus about how we treat monkeys, and we should follow that. And also, we need to communicate to the society the importance of non-human primate research so that this line of research can sustain. Now, I want to make an example as to how we study higher cognition possibly. One of the interesting things about human is self-consciousness. Now, there's a test called mirror self-recognition test. You stand in front of a mirror, you put, see whether you can recognize yourself in the mirror. One way to test whether a subject is actually has the awareness of itself is to put some markers on the face. If the subject looking in the mirror would touch that marker in the face, then so that image in the mirror belongs to themselves. That's a mirror self-recognition. Human babies can do this by 2 years of age. Apes can do it, but monkey cannot. Now, ape is not an experimental animal, but monkey is an experimental animal. You can put a mirror in the cage of the monkey from right after birth for years. The monkey never learns to recognize himself in the mirror. And we can put a mark on a monkey face. They go to the mirror and they play with the other images in the mirror. So they cannot learn by themselves. And also there are psychiatric autistic patients who are impaired in the mirror self-recognition. Is this due to the deficiency of self-consciousness or we need to understand what is underlies the self-consciousness as reflected by this ability of recognizing themselves in the mirror. And so we thought a few years ago, if we can make a train monkey to perform, to be able to pass the mirror self-recognition test, to show they have the ability to recognize themselves, then we can look into their brain to see what happened when they recognize themselves, so to understand what is self-consciousness. So we did a set of experiments, my associate Ngong and a student. The initial experiments, we put a laser spot shining from the side to the face of the monkey who is sitting in front of a mirror. This head of monkey, this mirror image. Now the laser spot hit on the face. This is a higher power laser, so there's some warmth feeling. So they tend to touch it. They know where that point is in the mirror. So it has been trained. After many weeks of training, they would recognize. They would recognize a spot on that in the mirror is on their own face. So they established a visual somatosensory association. Then after that, you can do the standard test of mirror recognition test. They would pass it. Most of the monkey passed it. Now primatologists doesn't like this. They think that this is a conditioned response. They are not self-consciousness used to be something intrinsic in the animal. It's something. It's not something you can train. Whatever train behavior is a conditioned behavior. So, and especially we are training them to touch their face. So this is really a condition to touch face. So we decided to do another set of experiments in which we put a laser spot on the side, on the back of the monkey. Monkey is sitting back. Now there's a spot in the back of the, they can see in the mirror. Their job is to touch that precisely at right time. The spot moving very fast. They have to follow that spot. So they have to control themselves. What that means is that they have to know where the hand position of that mirror, of the hand, is actually can be controlled by themselves. So it's called a proprioceptive sensation, the body sense, the sense of their own body. Now, in the beginning, they cannot do this. It's just random touching hand. Finally, they realize that if they can control themselves, they can move, touch that spot. So they establish association of visual proprioceptive, the body sense. And once that's established, they passed all of them. Five monkeys all passed the test. Now, I don't want to show you all the results, but this is the earlier set, visual somatosensory association. We have seven monkeys. two of them didn't pass. Five of them consistently passed all the tests. Just they put a mark on the face, and they would go to the mirror, and they touch that mark, scratch the mark. Or they put on the ear, they would scratch that mark over the ear. And consistently, the two monkeys that similar trained, but they just didn't get it, that the image in the mirror belongs to them. Two stupid monkeys among all of them. There are five of them are doing very well, right, so consistently. So this here is the how they are doing in the mirror test. So we secretly put some dye on the face, so a red dye or green dye. So the monkey look at it, the stereotype behavior. Now this is more convincing. Spontaneously, we don't put anything on the face. The trained monkey would go to the mirror and pull on their own hairs in the mirror. So they somehow know that's it. And they are also becoming interested in the places they couldn't see before. Right. So the one that the yellow collar is a monkey that was not trained. They were co-housed for 1.5 years together. The untrained monkey never learned. It just watched. The other trained, he got to get the understanding that the image belongs to himself. That establishment of that connection has to be established. So so this is what we did. Briefly, what does it mean? It means that a monkey can learn mirror self-recognition tests, so they can be used to study the conscious self-consciousness. Now we are not putting them into a scanner now. We train them and see the monkey who will train before and after, when they see the mirror, that's now they will train to recognize that's themselves, what happened to their brain. What's associated with self-awareness? When the monkey are trained, right? This is by scanning. We also put in electrodes, which this can be done in monkey, experimental ECOG, over all the area in the brain, and to see what happened during the training. When they start to realize when they are triggered to know they are seeing themselves, what happens in the brain. But this also had an implication among this test, on the test itself, the mirror self-recognition. We think now it's only an experimental tool to reveal the self-awareness. I mean, we didn't, by training, give the monkey the self-awareness or self-consciousness. It's just a way that monkey know the connection of the mirror image with themselves. So the monkey become a tool to reveal this self-consciousness, right? So this was different. In the past, that the primatologists think that monkey doesn't have self-awareness, but apes have it. It's not the way. Somehow apes were able to establish the connection, but monkey doesn't. Maybe even cats and dogs have self-consciousness. If we have find a design to reveal their way of showing their self-consciousness, right? So this changed idea for mirror self-recognition as a tool. Now, impaired mirror self-recognition in autistic or schizophrenia or dementia patient, may indicate defective the visual proprioceptive association. We think the visual somatosensory test in the beginning is also a proprioceptive. They know they are touching the hand. It's just that the training is on the face. Right? So perhaps this training of association of mirror image might be a way to treat these patients. The human baby may acquire this by learning rather than intrinsic. By the 2 years of age, the baby has already learned the language, Maybe they are told that by the parents or the mirror the image in the mirror is the baby's face. So this might be a learned behavior. So the next set of experiments is more drastic. Now we know that difference between monkey and man is the gene. During the evolution of the primate species, some mutations in the genes endow a very special property of the human brain development. The human cortex explosive growth of the human cortex, making human brain much bigger than monkey brain. So we would like to understand the evolution process that led to this bigger cortex. And how to do that? Now, there are genes identified critical for the development of cortex. Right? So a set of researchers, not in our own institute, but in the South, in Kunming, did a set of experiments called transgenic expression of human gene experiment. Right? This can be done now. What you do is you inject a human gene with a virus vector into the egg, the oocyte, the female, we obtain from female. Once you inject that, the gene is put into the cytoplasm of the egg, then you do an in vitro fertilization by injecting the sperm. In vitro fertilize the egg, so it become an embryo, fertilized embryo. Then that can develop. But the gene, the external gene, or called transgene, is in the embryo. They would go and develop along with embryo development. When the embryo develops well, you put a surrogate mother, implanted the embryo, you give birth, get pregnancy, and give birth to young monkeys. So recently, the people in the Kunming, Subin, and Wei Zizhi, put a gene called a MCPH1 gene. It's a gene, if defective, you have a small brain. The microencephalon, an abnormal development of the human brain can result from a defective gene, a defective MCPH1 gene. So it turned out that you can study this gene in animals, in mice, in monkey. The normal gene is very important for development. So these investigators put this human gene, normal gene, into the embryo, and give birth to eight monkeys. In their brain, they express this human gene. Now, what happened is that they found that there's a delay in neuronal maturation, similar to the developmental delay of the humans. Now, in human, the way that the cortex keeps growing, one theory is that the development is slowed down. It's called neoteny. The neoteny of the brain is the reason that the cell keeps dividing. You get more and more cells. You get a bigger cortex. And the MCPH1 gene happened to be one of the genes that may control the cortical proliferation of nerve cells. Right, so this is a demonstration that indeed the neoteny can be introduced by this gene. And you can also see human-like delay of expression of neuron differentiation, synaptic changes. And also, if you test the short-term plus memory, these monkeys has a better short-term memory. So apparently, this endowed the monkey with a better ability by having slower development of cortex. Eventually, they grow the similar size as the wild-type monkey, but slow development somehow helped. Well, anyway, this is a very exploratory studies in the frontier of cortical development. And by these type of studies, we can understand why human genes make us make our cortex. Very important frontier work. But this paper, when it's published, raised a lot of problems. Now, people in the media start, wow, these investigators creating smart monkeys and the Planet of Ape is a scenario comes to mind, that you're creating a different species with higher intelligence, right? So this is a really exaggeration of the finding. The important thing is that the cortical development, human gene, MECP2 gene, is really important for the neoteny of the brain. So this is one example. The other example is a disease. So we have this another gene called MECP2 gene, which is if you have a mutation or duplication, more copy of this gene, you cause Rett syndrome. Rett syndrome is one form of autism, an autistic disease. So if we put this gene, this was done a few years ago by people in my own institute, put this human MECP2 gene into the monkey by the same way of injection in early embryo, producing a monkey that this gene is expressed specifically in nerve cells, and they are inserted in different chromosomes, in different number of copies, depends on the monkeys. Variable insertion of this gene into the chromosome, different chromosomes. All right, so there we have seven monkeys will all have different copies of MECP2 genes. But behaviorally, they show very distinct phenotype. That is, their behaviors, one of the characteristics, they have repetitive stereotype motion in the cage. Now, normal monkeys move around in all directions, but the mutant or the transgenic monkeys tend to move in circles in the cage. And the circular motion is a characteristic of all the transgenic monkeys with respect to different copies of gene. They have a different extent of behavior, but they all higher frequency of this stereotype motion. Well, stereotype repetitive motion is a characteristic of autistic symptom. So they all have higher anxiety. There's an anxiety test. You face the monkey in the eye. The monkey would feel uneasy, and they will make sound, make a grunt sound that a signature of anxiety. This is a standard test in the monkey. So they all have a different degree of higher anxiety compared to wild-type monkey. More importantly, if we look at social behavior. In groups of monkey, transgenic monkey versus wild-type monkey, the transgenic monkey tend to stay alone. They don't interact with other monkey. The interaction with wild-type monkey or with themselves are all reduced. You can also do a test by taking a monkey out, pair with another monkey in a separate cage, and in this pair, the transgenic monkeys also doesn't interact with transgenic monkey. They sit on their own. They don't come and usually come together and play and grooming against each other. They don't do that. Well, wild-type monkey does it often. Right? And if you have a wild-type and transgenic, there are a lot of interaction. The wild-type tend to go to the transgenic, even though they want to sit alone, but you still have a higher interaction. So we can do cognitive tests. There's a standard test called the Wisconsin General Test for cognitive tests. A different test show that this memory test, memory or cognition test. The transgenic monkeys all have, on average, no significant difference from the wild type, but they're highly variable. Some of them, the score are very good, very high than normal. Some are lower. So the high variability are shown in the transgenic in the, some of the tests. And they are, in general, they can do the test, but they are different time courses, maybe slower. In this particular test, it is slower than normal. So all of this suggests that we have a transgenic autistic monkey that might be useful for some understanding of autism, maybe developing treatment for autism, for Rett syndrome. Right, so that's one example. Another better example is the following. Recently we produced a circadian rhythm disorder monkey. Now, you know the circadian rhythm, the daylight cycle, is very important for our food consumption and metabolism. During the day and night are very different, and there's a cyclic change of proteins in all cells, basically, that control the metabolism. Now, variation of the cell metabolism is in the core regulator, a group of genes called core transcription factor, some of them like PER2, BML1, CLOCK, CRY, all these are discovered to be the early initiator of the changes in the gene expression of all the other protein. Now, the 2 years ago, the Nobel Prize was given to people who discovered this gene. Now, the abnormality of this core transcription factor can cause cancer, premature aging, diabetes. In fact, they also are linked directly to neurodegenerative disease. For patients, normal patients, the activity of the human highly active during the day, very low activity during night when they're mostly sleeping. But for Alzheimer's patient and Huntington disease patient, this pattern, daylight pattern, are smelled out. They are not as clear. A lot of activity during the night. Right, so the circadian rhythm is in trouble. In fact, you look at the melatonin, which is an endocrine molecule that controls the circadian rhythm, has a cyclic variation during day and night. Their amplitude is reduced. And the core transcription factor controls the expression of many genes, the BML1, shows nearly flat in Parkinson patients. Compared to the daylight cycle. So for this reason, we thought that if we can knock out the BML1, we may be able to produce a model for many of the neurodegenerative disorder symptom. And an investigator, Chen Hongjin, in the lab, our institute, Laboratory of Circadian Regulation, use the latest method called CRISPR-Cas9, which you can, like a small scissor, you can edit the DNA sequence of this particular gene so that they do not express. Basically, you delete this protein. The deletion sometimes is complete, sometimes are not complete. Some cells that are deleted, some cells are not. Complete knockout, complete deletion called knockout, shows no BML1 synthesis. But for a partial deletion, what we call mosaic knockout, you see a reduced amplitude of this protein. Now, we produced three knockouts, complete knockouts, and two mosaic, five monkeys were produced. And these monkeys, some male, some female, show clearly a disrupted locomotive activity. You can see that the wild-type monkey is very clear day activity, night activity. The day-night activity are becoming irregular. A lot of activity show up in during the nighttime in this knockout monkey. Now you can do periodogram, quantitative measurement showing that night periods for activities are very much disrupted in this monkey. Now more interesting is the sleep pattern. Now, there are several types of sleep. There are so-called slow-wave sleep, where the non-REM sleep, or the REM sleep, like your eye move, called rapid eye movement sleep. This type of different stage of sleep can be monitored by looking at brainwave, the EEG pattern. you can measure it and do analysis. So we can see that compared wild type and knockout monkey, the wake state we can monitor just like they are not sleeping. The non-sleeping state during the night is increased for a cup in the wild type, or in the knockout compared to the wild type. The two types of sleep, non-REM and REM sleep, are all reduced in knockout. And this difference is even more severe if we do 3 days, 24 hours, all night experiment that they produce no environmental daylight difference to the monkey. This would exaggerate the difference. The sleep are greatly reduced in the knockout, so they do not regulate sleep as well. In the when we knock out this protein from the animal. Now, in the blood, you can see the cyclin enzymes, the hormones that are regulating all the body metabolism. For example, in melatonin, which some of you may be taking melatonin, which goes up during the night. And so if you take a melatonin pills, it will help you to go into sleep. The melatonin in inner body actually cyclate, very clear cycles. But this cycle in the wild type is greatly reduced in amplitude or simply wipe out in the knockouts. The testosterone, a steroid hormone, which is also undergoes cycling in the blood, in the wild type, and also flattened. And the other enzymes, then the other hormones, in particular the cortisol, which we will call stress hormone. When you have stress, this cortisol goes up in your blood. Now, normally it goes through a cycle during the day and night. But when this protein is gone, the knockout, the cortisol remains at a high level. This is the most striking changes in the blood. And so that immediately led us our suspicion that the emotional state of the monkeys is different. In fact, there's a stress and depression-like phenotype, very clear. Now, all the both the complete knockout or partial knockout, the mosaic monkeys show reduced movement in the cage. They tend to hide in the corner. That's very clear in all the measures of the motility, completely different. The wild types are all very clear what they are doing. They all cluster together, while the knockout monkey is the locomotion are reduced and given a sign of stress and depression. They tend to hide in the corner or up on the top of the cage. So here's two examples. Normal monkey, when the person comes in to feed, they go around in the cage. They are very active. They want to interact with people. While the knockout monkey, they hide in the corner when people come in. They're just afraid of people. And they always show this behavior very consistently. So this is what we would consider anxiety or depressed phenotype. You can also look at the schizophrenia phenotype through the EEG recording. In the human schizophrenia patients, there's a very clear sign of oddball effect. If you give a regular sound followed by a deviant sound, there's a wave show up in the EEG pattern. And that's the schizophrenia human are very, very clear difference in this wave called the mismatch negativity wave. In the monkey also show this wave. Now, there are recent pre-pulse inhibition studies also showing monkeys show pre-pulse inhibition, reduced pre-pulse inhibition, reflecting similarly to the schizophrenia. So it's a wide spectrum psychiatric disease. In fact, this is reasonable because you look at a gene that are triggered by the knockout of BMEL1. There are thousands of genes you can look through it. You can see very clear knockout pattern during different hours of the day. The expression of these genes are completely different. Some goes are reduced in the knockout, some are enhanced in the knockout. And you look at what are the genes, genes code the protein, protein codes the function. And what are the functions these changes would introduce? It includes immune system process, response to stress, the gene that cause inflammatory response, cause cell death, locomotion, a lot of aging related genes are all affected. So this is what we are doing is a very key proteins in the cell, in the brain, are knockout. That protein triggers a lot of gene expression in the brain. So we are actually giving a wide spectrum disorder of gene expression. That includes all the phenotype we're looking. So this is not very specific, but on the other hand, this is a way to look at a multi-gene effects on a phenotype. Right? So it might be a good model to study specifically, for example, the stress and disorder, stress and depressed phenotype. If we can find specific treatment to reduce that phenotype in a monkey, without affecting other things, everything is other things are normal, then that might be a good approach to develop the cure for the stress and depression symptom. So this type of approach, I've illustrated to you, the viral induction of transgene, they are either by incorporate new genes into the chromosome or by editing specific genes, what we produced are variable phenotypes in the offspring, because in the mice, in other model species, you can breed. You have a diverse phenotype. You can breed using breeding methods to produce a uniform generation. Right? The generation for a monkey is slow. It takes a maturation of 5 to 6 years before it can get a generation. So it's another way to produce a uniform phenotype. So the variation of genetic backgrounds of the oocyte or the X we use to edit the genes are all different, for coming from different monkeys. So this is not a good way of producing model systems. So-called model, mice is a good model because we have a cell line with uniform genetic background, many mouse lines that can be used. So you take a small group of mice, compare control and experimentally treat it. You don't need too many mice. You can determine whether the treatment has an effect. The noise due to the background, genetic background, are reduced by having the mouse line. So we hope we can generate monkey line without the reproduction. How can you do that? Cloning. The cloning has been done for many mammalian species, up to 20 species. Since the Dolly the sheep, you have heard. Dolly the sheep was generated 20 years ago in UK. Following that, dogs, sheep, camel, cow, and you name it, all the mammalian species have been cloned. But except primates, non-human primates, monkey. So there are reasons that primate species are difficult, are different, their embryologies are different. So there was perhaps a barrier for doing this. So 6 years ago, we decided in order to generate uniform genetic background monkey for experiments, for basic research or biomedical research, we have to have the clone monkey. So the way to clone is you take the skin cells, somatic cells, and culture it. You can produce millions of them. Every one of these cells, like fibroblast skin cells, all have the same nucleus, same identical gene. Now you take that cells, you fuse that cell with an oocyte obtained from the female. But you take the nucleus of that oocyte away, you use the somatic cell, the skin cell, fused with that that oocyte without nucleus. So you reconstruct the oocyte that will express all the genes in these skin cells. So every cells, every reconstructed oocyte would have the same gene, same nuclear gene. And then if you are that can develop, if the embryo can develop, you can put into surrogate female, it will give birth to a clone. And this is the way how Dolly the sheep was produced. Now, the problem is that the development has been a problem. Most of our effort, people have tried this for over 20 years. The embryo stopped, reconstructed embryo stopped to develop in a dish before you can do the transplantation. In a few cases you did implant it into surrogates, they were aborted soon after pregnancy. Now, so the key is that these genes in the nucleus of the somatic cells are closed. Many of the genes used for development are closed because they have already differentiated into a distinct cell type. So developmental genes are closed. So you need to open those developmental genes. So recently there are new technology appeared for epigenetic modulation. So using those tools, we are able to help the development of the embryo, reopen the gene in these skin cells to allow them to support the embryo development to give to be healthy in the pregnant female. So this is the procedure. I think my time is close, huh? 5 minutes?
5 minutes,
okay. So I don't want to go into the detail how this, you have to remove the nucleus from the oocyte and then you do the fusion of a fibroblast with the oocyte, right? There's a movie you want to say. So this reconstructed embryo does not develop well. Whether they develop well depends on the so-called inner cell mass in the embryo, in dish. When those high frequency of this inner cell mass are produced, then we're ready for implantation. And it turns out that very few embryos develop inner cell mass. But by introduction of the epigenetic modulator, in particular so-called histone deacylase inhibitor, histone demethylase, with this we can greatly increase the healthy embryo. And with this healthy embryo implanted in the surrogate mother, we produced two clone monkeys from the fibroblast last January, January 2018. And these monkeys are identical in their nuclear gene. You can test the nuclear gene. They are identical. They are different from their surrogate mother, from the oocyte donor. Their mitochondrial gene, on the other hand, are identical to the oocyte donor because the oocyte contain lots of mitochondria that dominate the embryonic mitochondria. So mitochondrial genes are not identical. So these monkeys lived well, and they were right after 1 month after birth, they were kept in the human incubator. They are very well. This was last year. Very, very healthy baby. 6 months later, we put in them into a cage with, this is the finding. We put them into the cage together with other monkeys, wild monkeys. You cannot tell the difference. They are very active. They are just as active as the other. All the behavioral tests so far seems to be very much normal. So we have identical twins produced by these methods. Now, having this produced, then we ask whether we can produce diseased monkey by the same way. We had this depressed monkey by knocking out the circadian rhythm gene, BMEL1. So this is the one monkey with a complete knockout. We took their skin cell, cloned 5 monkeys by the same way. And these 5 monkeys are alive. The monkey, this example, within a month or so, it started to show the similar phenotype as their skin donor, right? This sort of depressed phenotype. So we now have a genetic uniform group. Now, the number of these clone monkeys is still small, but the feasibility is there. We can generate a lot of them. Now this is the Nature has a Newsom view on this clone disease monkey. It says the clone monkey, gene edited monkey clones stir excitement and debate. Now what is the debate? The debate is that whether it's worth it, whether we should do this to the animal, now produce diseased monkey, is that ethical? That's the debate. Right? So I want to bring this question to you. You can make judgment. I think we don't have any drugs, effective drugs for many of neurological disease. If we can produce clone monkeys or genetic edited monkeys, we can develop the drug more efficiently. It would benefit this human society. On the other hand, we have to use monkeys. It's an experimental animal that we can reproduce in the laboratory, whether that's a ethical problem. In fact, the many ethical issues in the cutting-edge neuroscience, I will just mention a few. Neuromodulation technology is now on the way. You can monitor and modulate your individual's brain. Right? Is that ethical? Who decides who can monitor other people? Modulate other people's brain. And there are drugs that might be repair human brain function, but you can also enhance human function. You can make you smarter. Who decide the right to have cognitively enhancer drug? Right? The rich people might be able to do this. I bet it would be very, very expensive to have cognitive enhancer. And the society has to decide whether this drug should be developed. I mean, drug companies are crazy about producing smart drugs. But society has to decide whether this is a good way to go. There are genetic technology on human genetic disorder. They are concerned that you do genetic diagnosis to knowing you have a disease which you cannot cure. Do you want to do that? Gene stem cell therapy, some of them are experimental. Do you want to try it? That might be effective. You can do gene editing on human embryo. There's a limit you can do it for experiments. You cannot gene edit embryo because you edit your reproductive cell. You can produce new generations with gene edited. That's a new species, but it's not ethical. People all agree with that. But you can correct non-somatic gene, which are not reproductive cells. Only this generation, you can cure your disease by genetic methods, but on cells that do not reproduce. Right? So that's a decision has to make. There are research using non-human primates, as I said, editing treatment model. Is this ethical to do it? Human cells and tissue xenografts. They can grow human cells in monkey tissues, produce chimeric. Like you have a transplantation. There's great need of transplantation, liver tissue, you know, heart tissues. They don't grow well in the dish. If they probably could grow better in a primate species. Right? All these are problems. I think I should stop. We need a global consensus of neuroethics, which is a very important thing to consider. Right? We have to abandon the frontier scientific pursuit with society needs and concerns. We have to also consider human values and universal human values versus some cultural religious factors associated with it, which are society dependent. Right? So those are things that we need to consider, many of things. And also, I want to say the last thing about the need of scientists to convey the realistic capability of cutting-edge neuroscience to the society. Facts and fictions are mixed. We tend to think that neuroscience is very powerful. You can actually read your mind. Well, is that really true? And when can we do that? Some of them are fiction. I think the neuroscientist has to give the society a correct expectation of what neuroscience can do. Something we don't know what would happen, but this is, I think our scientists haven't been doing a very good job in doing this. So there are misconceptions about the future of monkey taking over the world, or human robots, human-like robot taking over human society. Those are fictions. Right? Okay, I'll stop here. Thank you.